Hello, friends and folks, and welcome to Scanline Media's 2022 Gimmick Awards, where we sit down, discuss, and celebrate the media that we checked out in 2022. I'm Six Stutmar.
I'm Jennifer Unkle.
I'm Kyrie Page. But we're going to go even further back. We're not satisfied with 1 year.
Right. So we didn't, I think most of these, I'm looking at it, yeah, most of these, some of these I did, actually, we did not play in 2022 because this category is game of a decade ago. We've had, you know, it's always you do game of the year, and some of this stuff is like you're talking about things that came out like, you know, 2 months ago or something, right? Because we record in, you know, January, February.
But mm-hmm. Yeah.
Still pretty fresh in your mind, pretty hot. You don't necessarily have a ton of perspective. Host emeritus Emily from Bottle Crow, my big sister, had the idea of like, why don't you do a category looking back 10 years and pick what your game of the year is from in this case, 2012, now with 10 years of distance and perspective. And it feels like a good year to do this. We might do it again next year. We might not, like all of these awards. But this is the year that it becomes 10 years of Scanline Media.
Hey. Who knew?
So, yeah. I think this is like this category here, the 2012 Game of the Year would be the last one that Jen and I did for the site we were writing for before. So we actually do have like written established games of the year that we picked. We'll see how we feel about them now. Jen, can you read our list?
Sure thing. Our nominees are Analog, A Hate Story, Asura's Wrath, Dishonored, Gravity Rush, Journey, Long Live the Queen, Mark of the Ninja, McPixel, Persona 4 Arena, Skullgirls, Sleeping Dogs, Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed, Spelunky HD, 30 Flights of Loving, Tokyo Jungle, XCOM Enemy Unknown, Xenoblade Chronicles, and Zombie U.
Yeah. A lot of this list I filled out based on things I expected people to care about. So some of these might go quite fast because I was just wrong and no one cares. But overall, I think the biggest thing I took away from making this list was if we decide to do 2013, it's going to be a hell of a year. Because a lot of things it was like, oh, this actually didn't release in 2012. This is listed weird, where like it came out in Japan in 2012 or something.
Something weird so, like that. But
so next year I would have to argue about Danganronpa 2, but this year I don't.
We'll litigate that discussion in the future, I guess.
Possibly. We'll see what happens.
Does it make top three?
Listen, I'm with you, but I'm not the one who lives with her, all right?
I just glared at her off mic.
You could feel it. There was like a heat radiating. The intensity. Gosh, 2012, huh? Year of a couple of bangers. I think it's extremely funny that Skullgirls is still getting updates. Like, yeah. I mean, granted, there was a gap of time in which, what's his name? What was this asshole's name?
Mike Zymont.
Yeah, he, like, when he was removed from the project, quite rightfully, and then, like, basically everybody who worked on that game made a new company and bought the rights to Skullgirls, and was like, hey, let's just start adding new characters. Like, we have characters that we could talk about, like, in next year's awards of new Skullgirls characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think we could have had a character on our list this year. I just think nothing that came out spoke to us that much.
Yeah, but regardless, it's like the launch party never ended.
Yeah. That said, I don't think it's going to be top three. I think both of us are fond of Skullgirls, but I don't think for either of us it's like one of our go-to fighting games.
No, like I like Skullgirls like a lot, and I'm glad that there are people who are still out there like playing that game, having fun with it. But Skullgirls was one of those things where it just never really clicked for me. Maybe I just never put in enough time in it. And maybe it was also like the couple of years ago, which I did try to get into it. I had a friend who would just like kind of like, I don't speak with them anymore. It was just like doing the same combos over and over and then not telling me what I was doing wrong. I was like, that's slightly frustrating, but
now I mean, and that's kind of feels like Skullgirl Spirit to me. It's a game that really like fetishizes the era, like the end game of Marvel vs. Capcom 2, where it was an opaque game where you fucked up once and not only did you not get to play, but they like you like people like teabagged you as they comboed you to death.
Yeah.
I really don't respect Skullgirls' goals as a fighting game.
Right. Like I don't know, I felt like kind of clever when I figured out like one thing where it's like, oh, if I use Squiggly's like assist to recenter the camera to do a thing, and I was like, okay, that's kind of cool, but I never really found myself being drawn in by it. But hey, congratulations to 10 years of a launch party, I guess.
Yeah.
I'll
also say the announcer is so memorable that one more once ended up working its way into my vocabulary.
Yeah, there are definitely things to like about that game, and overall, I do. But, yeah. I would make similar comments about Persona 4 Arena for different reasons.
Also, a better version of that game came out a year later.
That's true, but also, even that better version of the game, I think the game's balance issues make it not very fun.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps this is just salt from a kanji player, but, like, it can be truly unplayable as certain characters.
Well, there was this old picture that was going around in fighting game circles for a while, which was, like, what happens if you, like, miss input or drop a combo in other games? It's like, other games, it's like, lose a little life. Another, you lose, like, a certain amount of resources. In Persona 4, you lost, like, a round. It's kind of rough. Still fun to mess around with. Shoutouts to Seth Boyer and my brother when we, at MAGFest, found a PS3 running P4 Arena, and we just played it on, like, the shittiest controllers possible and had an okay time, but maybe it had something to do with that, like, three out of the four of us were inebriated.
Sure.
As for me, I don't think Zombie U hangs with this list so much, even though it's a game I quite like. It is a game that, without the Wii U, which they have released versions without the Wii U over the years, it becomes a lot more mediocre. But the magic sauce where you're basically, you have to look at the gamepad to manage things in real time while a zombie can just creep up on you, it adds this fantastic tension to everything. And as gimmicky as some of its gamepad use was, it did a great job at, like, pulling you in and making you feel both engaged and just sitting on the edge of your seat as you quickly took care of things.
Zombie U was the game that was announced when the Wii U was announced. Everyone was like, oh yeah, no, this makes sense. Like, this concept of the using the survival horror thing of, you gotta look at the gamepad, which in theory looks away from the danger, is still a compelling and interesting idea, but rip the two-screen gaming, I guess.
I mean, I feel like you could do it in VR pretty close, because you just have it like, oh, you have to look down, but...
Yeah. I get a headache when I play VR, so...
Same. Yeah, I'm not here to, you know, just...
I think...
might be a way to make it live again.
That's it, like, I still genuinely thought, like, the Wii U, like, as a console was still, like, it was interesting and worthwhile to have, and there were some, like, really cool experiments on that system. Like, damn, that's, like, the game, like, when they released, you know, Super Mario Maker, is like, oh, that's the only console it makes sense for, in some ways. But, yeah. Zombie U is still to this day, like, a cool thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Wish it had been on a system that didn't, well, I wish the Wii U had just a few things that were a little bit better with it so that it could have lasted and maybe we would still have separate home and handheld systems so the DS format would not die. But yeah.
Biggest disappointment, once again, capitalism.
I think we should cut Analog a Hate Story. I'm happy to have it on this list. Much respect to Christine Love. And if it was Hate Plus, I would be fighting very hard for it. I think that's a really good game.
Mm-hmm.
Analog, I think, is a good game, but not one of the best games of the year.
I will say Analog a Hate Story is... It is a game that is still burned in my memory. Like, that is such an incredible visual novel. As a story, like some of the like side stories, or not side story, like the stories that you in the logs that you found in that game were spectacular. Like, and Hate Plus expanded upon it to like make that work complete. But Analog a Hate Story is like, it is spectacular, and it is something that you should absolutely.
Yeah, I think the 1-2 is certainly like is a good use of your time. But for me, I think Hate Plus is the special one of the two.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not that, you know, sorry, I guess that's a little dismissive, but like, it is the one I would fight for.
Sure.
And it didn't come out till the next year.
Yeah.
That's it. Like, some of that game inspired me to write some like stories that, of course, I never publish and concepts I never publish, but I do have, like, several files on my computer of stories I tried to write because Analog inspired me in such a way. I was like, oh, this is just such an incredibly interesting concept of finding this massive dead ship and finding the AI that ran it and puzzling together what the hell happened on this thing.
Mm.
Mm-hmm.
Sonic and All-Stars Racing is a kart racing game, Jen.
I don't know. One of the best fucking kart racers that is not named Mario Kart, though. Like,
that's such a qualifier. Like, I don't know that Mario Kart would ever make a game of the year.
The thing is, it's like the one that even to this day still stands out. Like, you see people, one of the first games people install on their Steam Deck is getting Sonic and All-Stars Racing Transformed on there.
What was the first thing you installed on your Steam Deck?
Not sure.
Not Sonic All-Stars Racing Transformed.
It was one of the first ones I installed.
It was Cook Serve Delicious 2. That's the first one for me.
Yeah, it's like, it has that vehicle transforming gimmick in a way that doesn't actually detract from it. It's kind of fun.
It's kind of fun.
No, I mean it changes up controls mid race in a way that is interesting. It references a bunch of neat Sega stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else, sadly, like Burning Rangers.
I'd rather just have a port of Burning Rangers. Please, Sega, I'm begging you, stop referencing Burning Rangers and just re-release Burning Rangers.
You can play as Kiryu and he drives in, like, various Sega arcade cabinets, which is pretty fun.
It is kind of funny when you drive as Ryo, Akira from Virtual Fighter punches the back of the forklift to make him go faster. But I don't know, it doesn't feel that substantive of a game. Isn't that also the one that has that, like, NASCAR lady in it?
I don't know.
And Wreck-It Ralph?
Does it have Wreck-It Ralph?
I don't know, it just felt like a slurry of, like, whatever they, was...
Yeah,
they did end up adding, like, the Team Fortress 2 characters to it at some point. Or some PC sort of version. Valve thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. I think it's a really good game, but yeah, it might not stand up next to all these other ones.
I feel like the only kart racer in history I can imagine fighting for in a kind of game of the year kind of context is Double Dash.
Huh. Okay.
Like, I wouldn't fight for Mario Kart 64.
And we're not doing...
And I love that game, but it's just not...
We're not doing Game of the 15 years ago, or whenever Double Dash came out.
Yeah. Okay. I put it on here as a tribute. I don't know how strong you actually feel about McPixel, Jen. I'm assuming not Game of the Year strong.
It is a very funny game, and it is a game that is fun to play, but also it's one of those things where, I don't know, it's a MacGyver joke. I don't know how much a MacGyver joke can stand across, I don't know how much a MacGyver joke can stand up to something like Dishonored or Gravity Rush.
Okay, yeah.
It was also, like, it was a big published, like, work, like, you wrote about this game a bunch, didn't you? Or was it just the one time?
I think it was just the one article, right?
Yeah, just the one article.
Okay.
Yeah, I enjoyed it a fair bit, and I still haven't gotten to the sequel, but I'd like to play it soon.
It's been almost 10 years. But we'll get there.
Sorry. The sequel came out last year.
Oh, yeah. It did?
So.
Yeah, a few months ago.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm listen. Don't pay attention to me. Let's see. Journey is such an incredible game.
It is.
I don't know, I'm looking at this list and it's like Journey is such a strong like thing. I like thinking about that game a lot. Like, it was quite an experience to just, like, going to a friend's house who had a PS3 hooked up, who just, you know, put a controller in my hand, and he said, no, just play this game. Just in one go. Like, it is the perfect, like, game you play all in one stretch. Because it only takes, like, 3 to 4 hours to, like, beat that thing, I think. But, listen, I have often talked about, like, the hero's journey as, like, a, you know, thing, and I've critiqued it as well, but, like, yeah, this is just, like, a abstract, almost art piece on the hero's journey, like, in video game form, and it was, like, rather novel at the time, and that game company is just really interested in making, you know, interactive, like, art pieces in a lot of ways.
I always thought it was amazing how it encouraged online co-op in a collaborative sense without, like, laying down any rules or anything like that. Just a unnamed stranger will pop into your game and you two will just go around for a bit.
Because that's the other thing that people forget about the hero's journey of being, like, a cycle. Because the intention behind that is you play that game for the first time. And you don't know what's going on, but then a stranger will show up with a longer scarf than you and be like, oh, I need to follow this person. They can show me the way. And then if you play that game again, you are now that stranger in that other person's game, guiding them.
Yeah, you get the white cloak. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's like you become that. And it's like, that is such a, like, cool thing. Like, as an experiment in online co-op, as an experiment in, like, game design and, like, that sort of thing. Like, I have a soft spot for games like Journey and Proteus that are just, like, trying to do something with, like, with the medium. I would definitely earmark it for now.
I don't know that any of us here are going to fight for Xenoblade Chronicles. I do like it.
Was that the Wii U one?
Yeah. Oh, no, that was the Wii one. That was the first Xenoblade.
The original Wii one. Okay. I was thinking Xenoblade Chronicles X.
I need to get back to Xenoblade Chronicles because that game is really fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm quite fond of it. I just don't think it's going to be one of the top three here.
Yeah, that's fair. None of us got... the same, none of us finished it like you have, basically. But yeah,
I've never played it, so
you should play it. I think you'd like it,
probably. Yeah. Likely.
I'm really feeling it.
Let's not lose our heads, though.
So, okay. I want to cut XCOM Enemy Unknown because I love that game. But it takes until Enemy Within, which it really, like, kicks off. But man, XCOM Enemy Unknown is really fucking good. I don't know if, like, either of you two, like, have strong feelings about that game in the same way I do.
I don't like it as much as you do. I think it's cool, but I think it and 2 have the same issue of doing such a bad job of explaining the meta systems, like the larger game systems, mm-hmm. and then also being very punishing, that like almost everyone I know is like, yeah, I had to restart 3 or 4 times because I got several hours in, perhaps like sometimes like 10 hours into a playthrough, and then realized there was a fundamental system I misunderstood and I was fucked.
Yeah, that is so. Enemy Unknown definitely has that issue. I think it is much more approachable than the older like XCOM games, but like that's by design. Mm-hmm. And Enemy Unknown definitely punishes you if you do not like really think about like satellite placement and like all this other stuff. But as a game of like, that was a game for me that once I got into the groove of it, like I could just play it for so long. Like that was I really discovered it in 2014. Like that was my podcast game. Like I would listen to podcasts while playing that game, but like there was just something so deeply satisfying of like, you know, setting up attack routes and things like that. And it's like, I think it is really fun and really cool. And XCOM 2, I think, expands on the ideas like present in 1 and then Enemy Within, which came out much later. Because Enemy mm-hmm. Within fixes some of the problems of Enemy Unknown, where Unknown was just kind of like encouraging a very passive playstyle because of how punishing it could be. You know, it was, you know, move your guys, Overwatch, move, Overwatch, move, Overwatch, see one dude, take him out, just take forever and just do it. Within tries to like address that problem.
Isn't Within the thing that makes it harder though?
Yes and no. They added like more stuff that you could do, more upgrade trees that you can go into, more units, but it introduced the idea of like there are basically these timed boxes that within 3 turns will explode, and if you can push and like get a unit over there to recover it, you can get better resources, but it's a risk to like push into like an unknown area. Like that's like the core tension of XCOM, is you have your like squad of guys and how deep into enemy territory do you want to take it? Like, where do you want to risk it? Mm-hmm. That said, I have beaten like original Enemy Unknown once or twice. It is like that final fight is still pretty fun. It is kind of fun to have your super overpowered like guys, like if you've gotten into a good rhythm and not lost any of them, and just like, oh, they're completely OP, you get to kick down like the mothership's door and just like, you know, take down some like alien scum. It's pretty great.
Yeah, I liked it enough that I ended up picking up Midnight Suns, which I haven't played yet, just because I like Jake Solomon and his team, and I think that what they did with XCOM is incredibly cool. And I do think that accepting the idea that you might just have to lose and start over a 15 to 30 hour campaign is just kind of something that's just part of the game you have to accept to some degree. But also, as someone who likes playing a ton of games, it is something that has prevented me from going back and playing it a bunch.
I think it is one of those things where if you do decide to check out like Enemy Unknown or Enemy Within, read up on some like general like tips and guides on like how to do the early game, because it's really the early game that kind of trips you up, because you know, you don't know what like, oh, how far into the base should I dig to add these like things? What's more valuable, scientists or engineers? That sort of thing. But I think it is a game that once you get into its groove, it works really well. But like I said, Enemy Within does it, like, improves on it. And then XCOM 2 comes out several years later. XCOM 2. That's a game.
Wow. XCOM 2. Yeah, well, I'm not going to pick fights that are not relevant.
We'll have that fight in approximately 6 years.
I can go ahead and cut some personal things that I think you two are holding back because you don't want the fight. I know Tokyo Jungle isn't going to win here. I love Tokyo Jungle.
Tokyo Jungle, it is great to play the little Pomeranian and then rip out the throat of other hands. Like, I don't know. Tokyo Jungle is just such a cool thing.
It's a really great roguelike. I think, like, it brings you in with the novelty and sort of like the shocking image of, yeah, like of a Pomeranian, like, you know, like ripping a hippo's throat or something, right? Yeah. But there's a lot more to it than just like the initial like shocking goof. I think it actually has surprisingly good, like, not a lot of it, but surprisingly good writing and a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think the mechanics are really well considered, and it is really fun just to play as an action roguelike, and the different characters meaningfully, I think, like, not dramatically, but like simply the way power scaling changes your relationship to the environment, where it's like, oh, well, obviously playing as a Pomeranian is really hard and playing as a lion would be really easy. It's like, no, dog, playing as a lion is actually pretty hard, because is your worry is not winning fights. Your worry is, boy, do you know how many calories your diet is? You're going to starve to death.
I will say there's an old Kotaku video on Tokyo Jungle that introduced me to one of my favorite words, like sprezzatura, which is like a Italian phrase for the act of doing something cool effortlessly. And like playing a Pomeranian, like once you get into the groove of Tokyo Jungle, you're kind of the living embodiment of that, where it just seems so effortless that you are doing something so out of league of a tiny, like a tiny dog, you know, or, you know, just like eventually you get a bunch of like Pomeranians on your side and you're just running around. Also, I have a picture somewhere at 6 hours. I have to dig it up, but a picture I took in Japan of a copy, like I went to a game store that was selling physical copies of Tokyo Jungle, and there was a lot of like handwritten like postcards in that store to advertise the game, and it was like someone drew a picture of a Pomeranian with a frog in its mouth. It's very cute. But no, Sony, please re-release Tokyo Jungle. I swear to God.
I mean, you know, I know this ship has sailed, but I just want you to bring back Japan Studio. They were the best thing you had.
Sorry, we're gonna make God of War 2, the new God of War 2, and it's gonna be a dad game, and you're gonna love it.
So, part of that's true. That's, you know, there's a little bit of, anyway. The other one that's my big pick that no one is going to agree with me on is Long Live the Queen.
Mm-hmm.
Long Live the Queen is the ideal form of the raising sim, where one, you take out an element that is traditionally part of the subgenre, which is creepy sex stuff with your child. Don't love that. So all that's gone. Instead, you have a raising sim that combines, like, I think through both making it very punishing, as far as like it's really easy to die, but also like really treating with respect the skills in a way that other things don't. Like, if you play Princess Maker 2, right, like there are points where it's like, oh, because you have high dancing, it's like, oh, you go to a party and you can dance well, right? But like, what about when you have to do negotiations with someone who barely speaks your language and you're trying to convince them of your sincere intentions, so you burst out into song and you're a really good singer, so your emotion gets through to them, right? Like, it's really imaginative in that way. I'm incredibly excited for Long Live the Queen 2, where you are the princess daughter of a space pirate emperor.
Ooh.
It sounds fucking great, and I'm excited.
Because isn't, like, also, if I recall, the other thing about Long Live the Queen is, like, it leaning into, like, some pretty absurd causes of death for the, like, princess? Or...
Oh, sure. Yeah. And also some, like absurdly realistic ones, right? Like, there's one where it's like, oh, okay, you failed your reflex check, so when your carriage was ambushed, you got hit by an arrow. But that's okay. What's your medicine score at? And you sit there quietly like, yeah? Your medicine score is low? Guess what? Obviously, you think it's a really good idea to pull that arrow out, and you're like, no!
And then if you didn't do it, you'd just die of tinnitus. something ridiculous, like, God. Long Live the Queen, hell of a game. One of the first games I ever gifted someone on Steam. Long time ago.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna end up picking a fight for this one, but... as much as I love it, as entertaining it is to go through the whole thing.
I feel like I know where you're going.
Oster's Wrath is a really cool game. Like, it has some of the most incredible cutscenes you've ever seen, but the act of playing it is, like, mundane at best and miserable at worst, where you're just, like, it's a very mediocre character action game where you're just hitting... You're just hitting very similar or the same combo over and over again until you get to the point where your meter's high enough, and then it's like you're doing a bunch of busy work, and then you hit a button to make the story continue, and that's basically the structure of the whole game.
I ended up being on the Abnormal Mapping episode for Oster's Wrath 2 years ago. That game is not as good as you remember, Kyrie. I still like it. It is not as good as you remember.
You're probably right, but I have just, this is the memories episode, I guess, but I mean, that's the point of this podcast, but when YZen fucking grows to the size of a planet, attempting to squish Asura like a bug on a plate or something, and Asura punches his like index finger so hard that he shatters. Asura's Wrath is a exercise in excess in storytelling that I feel like it's one of those things where it has like a really incredible start, some good bits in the middle, and I like the ending of it personally, but like there is a lot of stuff that just doesn't work, and the episodic structure isn't kind to it, and it would be much better if Asura's Wrath was just like a weirdo CG anime that came out over the course of a season of Asura going on his wacky revenge adventure against these gods. And also structurally, they honestly should make the Wizen chapter like the first chapter, so it's like, oh, who's this guy in this cloak, and then you punch a dude so hard that like he goes flying and it's cool as hell, and then you learn the backstory. But it is also really great when Asura encountering this like deity, like god-ass god, you know, and just like punching him over and over for making his daughter cry. I'm like, this game's all right.
Yeah, it's a very neat, interesting game, and like it got to me emotionally several times. I just also have a forever grudge against it for holding the ending hostage under DLC in an age where we're already seeing several of those servers shutting down.
Yeah, and that sucks. Like, it really sucks that within the next year, it may be impossible, like, to legally obtain like the true ending to Asura's Wrath, and that blows. The fact it never got a PC release also speaks to that, like it just not being retained. And I wish there was one, so that my dream mod is basically removing all the QTEs, and I just get to see the story play out without any input. And that's a damning thing to say about a video game.
I also think it would be worse if you did that, but I understand.
Yeah, because then the only playable bits would be the part where they give you full control of the camera and have you actually doing fights, and that part kind of sucks.
I know, I recognize that. Like, I recognize that Asura's Wrath is a really, like, it was a game going for something that just didn't work most of the time. But when you fight the dude with the sword that grows the size of the moon and he like tries to stab you through the moon, it rocks. There are moments in that game that rock, but you're right, it doesn't make top three.
I am comfortable letting sleeping dogs go.
Letting sleeping dogs lie.
It is.
But
go ahead.
For what though? I mean, like.
Well, hold on. I got like two that we might be able to. I see two on here that we might be able to dismiss.
Yeah. You sure?
I don't know. Maybe
like I'm estimating some things. Maybe
I might be. I might be. I don't know. What are our feelings on Mark of the Ninja?
It's a pretty fantastic stealth game. Like it.
To be clear, also by the way, I never played it. So.
But, oh. Okay. So yeah, I mean,
it's one of Clay's best games, in my opinion. Like they. They really knocked it out of the park, making something that, like, not only does it have fantastic stealth, but it supports you being able to approach problems in multiple ways and even rewards you for taking them. Mm-hmm. Like, you can get through an entire level without getting seen much or at all. And you can also go out of your way to just kill everyone there in the most bloody way possible and also find a way somewhere in the middle there. And it is one of the...
Wait a minute. No, I did play this. Hold on. Is this the game that has, like, the really cool mechanic where, like, you could duck in and out of, like, vision cones and it leaves, like, an after image that they chase after? Like, not chase after, yes. But, like, oh, this is your last known position and you can fuck with the guards in a very specific way with that information?
It does have that mechanic, yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Honestly, as far as stealth games are concerned, I think Dishonored is the easier cut.
Yeah, that was the other one. The other one I was going to suggest.
Really?
Dishonored is a really amazing game that I think is thoroughly hamstrung by incredibly sloppy, like, you know, like, moral system mechanics.
Oh, rats ate a guard from, like, 5 hours ago. Evil point.
Yeah. Evil point. Oh, you are an assassin and your job is to kill people, and so you kill your targets and they're like, I can't believe you're such a monster. It's like, what the fuck are we doing?
Two seems to be like a much better evolution of the ideas, but not even that.
But also two is unplayable because it has bug shit that is so gross I literally can't play the game. I just seize up and I have to shut down my console.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Like I have tried multiple times to get through Dishonored 2, but I just can't because the blood flies or whatever they're called.
They're so it's so miserable. I can't do it. But not the game we're talking about. But I do think if you took that system out, I would be fighting for it in the top three for sure. I could see it winning, but I really think that mechanic is like, first of all, like, sabotages all of the writing. Because it all comes to naught because it becomes really stupid. Also pushes you to play in a way that's really boring. It's a game that, like, you know, there you'll see, like, videos about this. How about it's a game that gives you a ton of cool toys and then, like, slaps you on the wrist if you try and use any of them. Because they're all lethal.
Well, I mean, it came from, like, it was supposedly supposed to, like, by getting the voice actor who voiced the original Thief in those old Thief PC games, like, is trying to say this is a evolution of those games. But
those games didn't have weird morals about killing people. It was only a problem because sometimes killing people would get you caught. It wasn't like Thief wasn't a game about, like, and ultimately Geralt always, you know, was a savior of the people. He gives, you know, like, they make that character have a conscience and do ethical things, but he is a thief. It isn't these, you know, like, they aren't parables, right?
Yeah. And you also run into the issue where some of the non-lethal ways of taking out your targets are arguably more fucked up,
like,
and evil.
Even more fucked up than, like, just straight up killing them or something.
It's like
that.
Oh yeah, I burnt out his tongue and then sent him to work in the slave mines for the rest of his life. Like, oh yeah, that's, you're right. That was the ethical thing to do. Yeah, I think we cut Dishonored.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't feel as strongly about the ethics system as y'all do, but I did find it funny when I was just consistently dropping guards into water in this one level, and they were all counted as kills. And I thought about it for a moment. I was like, okay, yeah, I guess that's fair.
I had one where I was like, I was doing my second run through, and I was like, I'm going to do like a zero chaos run. I'm going to do a pacifist run. And I choked everyone out, and it was boring as shit. And I had to be incredibly patient. And all the tools they gave me, I wasn't allowed to use because they're all like bombs and spike mines. And finally, I got to the end of a mission. Also, I was very careful about like, oh, I got to be careful of the rats. And apparently someone just physics their way down to the rats because I got to the end and it was a kill. And I was like, okay, so this whole run was a waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
That sucks.
Shoutouts to that one episode of the makeup reality show Face Off, in which they were sponsored by Dishonored, and their makeup challenge of the week was to make people look like the characters in that game. There was a day in which I watched a season of that show. We'll talk about it later.
That game does have...
Will we?
We won't.
I will say this in Dishonored's favor. Like, it has one of the most striking art styles I've seen in a game like that. It's fantastic what they do with the 3D models in that one.
I don't want to do this, right?
Yeah.
I would love for this game to be in the top three. But we're all professionals here. We're all critics. We've all done this for a while. And I think we all need to look each other in the eye and say, let's set aside the bullshit. We love it. Gravity Rush is kind of a mess.
Gravity Rush is one of the only good superhero games ever made. Like,
I agree with you. I also know that you spend about a third of that game doing weird time trials. I love this game. I don't think it belongs in the top three. I like it better. Like, if you're just saying what are the three games left that I like the most, it would be in the top three, but I don't think it actually belongs.
I think Cat is maybe one of the only, in addition to one of the only good superhero games ever, Cat is one of the only superhero protagonists I really enjoy spending time with. Like, the way that she is constantly getting pulled into situations where she either has to... Well, she basically is constantly trying to do a good thing, and people are just kind of giving her shit for it, but she understands that she has to keep doing it because otherwise things are just going to keep getting worse around here, and she might as well
It's just Spider-Man. I know you've only been exposed to, like, movies that are shit at writing, but it's just Spider-Man.
Also, Spider-Man
2. This is why everyone likes Spider-Man.
Yeah, that's Spider-Man 2 on the PS2 was all right. You had to jump off the Empire State Building, then you would swing. It was all right.
I think it has too many glaring flaws for this.
Hell of an aesthetic.
Are we talking about, like, the PS Vita one or the remaster?
Does it make a difference? It doesn't to me. If it does to you, I mean, take your pick. I mean, I guess the remaster one didn't come out in 2012.
That's
so.
The main thing.
Yeah.
Like, that came out in 2012. You know.
I guess my main thing with Gravity Rush is it is an incredibly fun PS Vita game, and it's an even better PS4 game because the Vita version kind of runs like shit at points.
I don't know. I think we kind of have to bite the bullet and, like, cut it.
Yeah, that's the reason why I was pushing for cutting Sleeping Dogs earlier, because I feel like...
Okay, let's cut Sleeping Dogs, then. I think you're right. I think you're saying, like, the same argument applies to Sleeping Dogs. I think that's fair. These are both games I like a lot.
Yeah.
I like them better than Mark of the Ninja. Maybe we'll cut Mark of the Ninja in a minute, but I think it belongs on this list more than those two do.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But say your piece on, like, Sleeping Dogs real quick before we do that. Because I know you really like Sleeping Dogs.
I mean, Sleeping Dogs is just, like, it is a open world crime game that, like, one, it's just really fun, but also it cares about crime as far as why it happens and how people get there, which is not a thing these games actually care about. Everyone is working from the example of GTA, which is like people do crimes because LOL murder. This games fucking suck. We all know this. Whereas Sleeping Dogs is a game about like being poor and being in a bad situation and being pushed to things and also being in a position to like
maybe I possibly think, do something about it.
Right. It is a game where you are an undercover cop, but like I think it does such a good job of like making you kind of sympathetic to this undercover cop because he's getting mad at the cops, right? There is a point where like the cops come crash a funeral, right? And you, as an undercover cop, are the one saying, this is bullshit, let's shoot them. Because you're so incensed. Sleeping Dogs is a really good game. But it's also a PS3 360 era open world game. And it has a lot of the mess that comes along with that.
The mess that like would be taken care of to a certain degree with the later, like I think a PC port would come later.
Oh, I'm not talking about how it runs. I'm talking about like just like open world like activities that are a waste of your time and yeah, you know.
Yeah. Also one of the rare games where its celebrity voice casting actually elevates it in certain ways. Like
yeah.
It is pretty silly when you're able to just go and date Emma Stone and whatever, but like I think that Will Young Lee gives a very good performance as Wei Shen, the undercover cop. Tom Wilkinson as Pendrew is the perfect sort of shithead undercover handler who finds ways to elevate you, but is also very clearly all about getting you to push your former friends into committing crimes so that they can then bust them and all that.
Yeah, I agree that it should go for the sake of the list, but damn, that's a good game.
Good game. Hell of a thing to come out of, like, a, not botched, but, like, initially a sequel to the true crime games, which were, like...
What are you saying about true crime? Streets of L.A., Activision, what? I played that game to completion. I beat that game. And Snoop Dogg's in the second one. Streets of New York. L.A. was, yeah. You did have Christopher Walken in that one, though.
Hey.
They call it the City of Angels. Strange. In all my time, I have never seen one. Like, okay, great writing. Good. This is how you're starting your game.
Thanks. Thanks, Chris.
Christopher Walken is a veteran of starring in shit in video games.
I guess this case has me rattled.
The wheels of justice are slow, but if you get caught up in them, your career can't even do the quote. Fuck. Ripper is such a hell of a game.
Yeah.
Shoutouts to Ripper, I guess.
Shoutouts to game of 2012, Ripper.
Ripper. No.
We're so close. We're so close. We're Keep it together, dang. I think we cut Mark of the Ninja.
Yeah.
Like it is a cool game with a lot of like stylish as hell.
But like I think like first of all, it just doesn't do anything as amazing as the other three left on this list that just are astonishing in one way or the other. Mark of the Ninja is just constantly very good. Mm-hmm. Also, I do have to knock some points for being the story about, like, the story of how corporations ruined the pride of our ancient clan of assassins.
Oh, man.
That is the story of that game of, like, oh no, corporate greed got the better of the shinobi.
It's from like, the people who
listen,
wrote...
white boy, put down the pen, stop writing.
From the people who wrote Shank.
To be fair, they have made many other incredible games after Shank, so.
Okay. So our top three is kind of like been made for us.
Yes. Yeah,
Journey, yeah. Spelunky, and Spelunky HD, to be clear, and 30 Flights of Loving.
Yes, those are our top three. You know what I'm about to say.
Yeah, you think Spelunky wins.
I mean, I think Spelunky is one of the best games ever made, so it happens to be in a year ripped to everyone else in that year.
30 Flights of Loving is a singular creation. Like, it is a
it
perfect...
It is true. It is a single thing that you download... Sorry, go ahead.
It is a short but perfectly executed bit of storytelling where you are pulled through a heist presented in a short film sort of situation where every single camera angle, every single bit that they have you do from actually doing the heist to just sitting on a balcony and throwing bits of food.
To be clear, 30 Flights of Loving, that's the one that starts, like, you're at the party, right? And you're trying to, like who wrote this game? I'm trying to remember.
It's Blendo Games.
Yeah, so it's Brendan Chung.
Brendan Chung, yes. Is this the one that starts at the party and it ends with you being pushed off the, like, balcony?
No.
What am I thinking of?
You're thinking of his previous game. I'm blanking on the name right now, but... it's even shorter and...
Is it Gravity Bone?
Gravity Bone.
I might be thinking of Gravity Bone. I honestly... Okay, so 30 Flights of Loving. Continue.
Yeah, 30 Flights of Loving is like the Gravity Bone format in terms of like you're presented with small gameplay vignettes that push you to like seeing specific, very carefully constructed scenes.
But, I remember 30 Flights of Loving now. Okay.
Yeah, it is... It tells an entire story without... any words, and it does so incredibly well.
I mean, the thing that was like really impressive about 30 Flights of Love, and this was a thing that was like present in Gravity Bone as well, was like by this being what was it? It was like a Quake 2 mod. By being able to rapid, like it does the non-linear storytelling thing of like a Tarantino, of like these like, you know, really stylish crime movies, but like the way it can just provide so much whiplash from moment to moment, really an incredible thing. Like 30 Flights of Loving and Gravity Bone, by the way, both of them together you can play in less than an hour, which is also really like incredible to think about. That I can, it took me a minute to get there, but the fact that I can recall vivid details of both Gravity Bone and 30 Flights of Loving like this far removed from its original release says something to the power of its, like, in the way that Journey is like a novel gameplay experience, like 30 Flights is also incredibly novel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I played 30 Flights of Loving. And I was like, yeah, that's cool. I don't know. I like, maybe you have to be more of a film person for it to bowl you over the way it seems to bowl over people. I think it's cool. I think it's good. I'm fine with it in the top three. Spelunky is like...
Spelunky is so amazing. Spelunky, like, as a thing.
It is sort of a, like a... Like a landmark moment for game design. For platformers and roguelikes, about a philosophy for procedural generation. And it's not just that, like, wow, it's so important. Go play that fucking game. It's so good. And I played, yeah, how much did I play? Like 60 something hours or whatever?
Didn't it also like wipe like how much time you had actually put into it at some point? Of Spelunky 1? Or am I thinking it's...
I don't remember that. If that could be true. I have 82 hours documented on Steam. And that might be that rings a faint bell. I might have been set to zero at some point.
Regardless, like Spelunky as a thing, like 10 years ago, figured out like shit regarding procedural generation that like other game developers are still trying to fucking figure out.
Mm-hmm.
Like, like it's, you know, like it, looking at like the three here that we have, like Journey, Spelunky, and 30 Flights, like Journey and 30 Flights, like offer this like really interesting like look at how do we really try to push, like, how you can tell a story in a game? Like, this is, I mean, people have been trying to obviously do this for the years, like, for the decades that the medium has been around, to be clear.
Yeah.
People have been telling interesting, innovative stories for a very long time.
I just want to say for a moment that in terms of 30 Flights of Loving style versus the whole one take thing that is going around as sort of like a popular thing ever since God of War, one take isn't impressive in a video game. It's just a thing that happens because you can control the camera. Having the camera just always on at the same time doesn't matter in a video game because it is just a video game that you have designed from beginning to end. It is not a single person going through one performance. Choosing very specific cuts, like 30 Flights of Loving, that takes fucking skill to a phenomenal degree. And if the creators of God of War weren't cowards, they would try something like that instead.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things that, like, by 30 Flights of Loving being, like, a Quake 2 mod, which Quake 2 was, like, an old-ass game by the time of 2012 at that point, like, as well understood that engine was, yeah, you can just instantly snap the player from, like, point A to point B with no loading or nothing. Like, you couldn't, as powerful as today's hardware is, like, God of War Ragnarok would never be able to pull that off because of,
like, sure it could. Sure it could. With the money they have and the resources, if they are to make use of both a much faster RAM and preloading and pre-caching and, you know, directing, absolutely they could do that. It would be difficult. It was difficult for Brendan Chung.
Yeah, there's a reason why it takes so long for his games to come out, other than the fact that it's indie and he's just a person working with a few collaborators. It's it takes a lot of fucking thought and skill to create something like that.
Okay. Can I get to the second point I was trying to make?
Yeah, sorry. He just got sidetracked.
It's fine. Because the second point I was trying to make with 30 Flights of Loving, by being on an older engine, it means more people can experience that story. That if the God of War developers wanted to do that, like, the only people that would be able to experience that are people with obscenely high-end PCs and, like, PS5s. Like, the fact is you can experience 30 Flights of Loving came out, you could run that game on just about anything and have, like, a really spectacular experience.
Mm-hmm.
Really, like, proving that it, like, its aesthetic sensibility, it's, like, it doesn't, like, yeah, these characters look like boxes on, like, models, and it works perfectly at that point.
Yeah, we were talking about Spelunky, too.
Sorry. No, Spelunky.
Well, I mean, we're talking about them versus each other, because I think...
Like, I love Journey. I don't think Journey takes it, because... If I could say one more thing about Journey?
Sure.
Journey is a... I think Journey is just a genuinely just, like, beautiful game to play. Not just, you know, for how it looks graphically. I just think it's, like, such a really keen and emotional experience that is really... It's that game company doing what they had been doing for, like, the past game or two. But just, damn, it's just affecting and moving. And having the moment in which your character, like, you are... you know, literally reaching apotheosis as you climb through this, you know, like, tunnel of light. It's gorgeous. And what's great is that you can still play this game. It's on Steam now. Like, I absolutely recommend people to just, like, pick a night and just play through that game all at once, in one stretch. Like, because it is a... like, if with game as meditative experience, I think Journey is one of the best, like, of that type, which I have a fondness for game as meditation.
Mm.
And whatever we decide here, you should do that with 30 Flights of Loving. And honestly, you don't even need to set an evening aside. If you're like, ah, shit, actually, I thought I started at 6:30. I start at 7. You have time to beat 30 Flights of Loving.
And Gravity Mode, too. You don't even need, you only need 45 minutes to play, like, some of the most interesting, innovative, like, story games, like, released in the past decade. Like, you don't need that long of time. And if you have, like, you know what, 2 more hours, you can fit in Quadrilateral Cowboy, I think.
That's
You're good.
That's a much more complicated thing. That fair is enough. A complex puzzle game.
Okay, yeah. Fair. I didn't play it, so I thought it was in a similar style to those other two, but regardless.
But yeah, Spelunky, to its credit, is like, it's the kind of game people talk about when they're like, well, when people say, oh, I wish I had a game I could play forever, Spelunky is kind of that, just because of how ingenious its design is, and how, like, it pretty much is the game that made daily challenges a thing, not only mm-hmm. for roguelikes, but for so many other genres as well.
And make it, like, an interesting thing that you'd want to engage with, because, like, there was, like, a great video that I have, that's stuck in my brain for years now, about, like, how intentional the level generation is for Spelunky. To occasionally you're going to have runs in which, like, the way the RNG, like, rolls is going to make it a little weird, but even that is kind of charming. Like, there's so much, like, intention and understanding of this, like, sort of thing that, you know what, I'll just say it, like, fuck all the, like, AI people going on right about now. It's like, oh, you just generate shit forever. It's like, no, you still have to, like, be very intentional of what you're trying to make anything with any kind of meaning. And Spelunky is, like, through its procedural generation, you can still tell there is an artistry to it.
Well, because there's so much work done on the procedure, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, it's... They are... I would not say every level is hand-tailored, right? But it is made up of segments that are.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right, but it just speaks to the power of that type of thing, of, like, how to use procedural generation as, like, a way to constantly make it a surprise, to make it feel like, oh, like, the fact that it captures that sensation of delving into a weirdo dungeon every single time you play it is an accomplishment.
Yeah.
And for that, it's game of a decade ago. Yeah? Yeah? How do we feel?
Yeah, fuck it. It's good enough that...
Yes.
I think you've argued it successfully into the top.
I'm going to have to give some things up when we come to moment or sequence because of this, but I will take it. I'm taking out a loan against future me.
Playing the long game. to acquiesce to 6. But genuinely, like, Spelunky is, like, really good. Also, it's on everything now, to a certain degree. Like, mm-hmm. You can play, like, Spelunky HD on Switch now, right? You've been able to do that for a while.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yeah, both Spelunkies are on everything.
Like,
except for phones. They're not on phones, because...
Good God, trying to play that with touchscreen. That'd be a nightmare.
But our winner for Game of a Decade Ago is Spelunky HD with runners-up Journey and 30 Flights of Loving. Next year will be more contentious.
Indeed.
And this was already pretty contentious. We really had a little bit of a...
Yeah.
I think that was one of our big... Yeah, I think, holy I think crap. The Testament song still is going to be our biggest, you know.
Mm.
But, you know...
Man, I've been just... Place. God, I've been fighting so hard for so many runners up this year.
you gotta not care more, Kyrie.
Okay, yeah, sure.
I know this is coming from me, but you know.
Okay, sure. Whatever that.
But yeah, we'll be back with more award categories. There will be more of them, and you will enjoy them, or we'll find you or something. I don't know.
I don't know.
Peace out, everybody.
See ya
later.
Thank you.